From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. After Superstorm Sandy, a debate over how to spend the more than $50 billion allocated for relief. Do we rebuild in a smarter, safer way, or do we abandon homes, neighborhoods, communities that are at too high a risk for future flooding? The governor of New York has a plan to buy back homes and leave the land undeveloped. With sea levels rising and extreme weather churning, what should become of our coastline communities? Climate change may be changing the calculus. This hour on Point, rebuilding or not? After Superstorm Sandy, you can join the conversation. How much should we backstop vulnerable coastal communities? All the way? Something less? Does climate change change your mind? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me now from New York is Matthew Sherman, editor at WNYC. He's been closely watching the Sandy aftermath in New York and New Jersey. Matthew Sherman, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So what is your government proposing, your state government proposing, your governor, when it comes to what buying back vulnerable homes?
Governor Cuomo is asking the federal government for permission to set up a buyback program of his own. About $400 million is the ballpark figure he's thrown out there, according to a state official who briefed me on it. That would go towards buying back houses that are in the 100-year floodplain and restoring them in such a way that they would withstand damage in the future.
Buying back seems to be the main emphasis of what's getting attention here. What portion of all the damage that we saw would is in that floodplain, Matthew?
Well, pretty much all of it. I wouldn't say I don't have a really great figure, but mm-hmm. We're talking upwards of 500,000 homes were damaged or destroyed by Sandy. Most of it was along the coast from Cape May, New Jersey, up through New York City coast, Staten Island, the Rockaways. Long Island was hit really badly as well. So the option to have your house take part in this program, I would say, would probably apply to the most vulnerable areas. That's really the ones right up against the shore that are repeatedly flooded. There's one portion of Staten Island, for example, Fox Beach, Oakwood Beach, that gets hit regularly by floods. Mm-hmm. It used to be swamp, and it's also subject to wildfires in the summer. And I talked to the city council member representing that area yesterday, and he just said that people there want out. So we're talking about people who are severely hit. A lot of other people are opting to rebuild. They might use the money to rebuild stronger, to put their houses on stilts so that they are above the floodplain. But I think the choice to really sell out, a lot of people are reluctant to do for a variety of reasons. If you take $400 million, I just did a back of an envelope calculation, mm-hmm. Tom. Mm-hmm. Let's say these houses, being in New York City, maybe they're worth $250,000 each. So we're talking potentially 1,600 units that would be bought out with this money if it were all to be used for the buyouts, if that money weren't diverted to rebuilding stronger. So
up against 500,000 damaged houses, that sounds like a pretty modest number.
Exactly right. It really is. It's really just a very small piece, but it's very symbolic, and I think that's why this idea is getting attention. Cuomo brought this up in his State of the State address a few weeks ago, actually, and he said, you know, there are some parcels that Mother Nature owns. She may only visit once every few years,
right, but
she owns the parcel, and when she comes to visit, she visits. And I think that idea that we have gone too far in developing our coastlines and we have to backtrack a bit, I think that's what is radical about this idea and why it's getting so much attention.
I think, yes, people are drawn to it because of exactly that. It may not be a big number this time, but it's a kind of change in the way, our way of looking at the coastline. What's Governor Cuomo imagining for these sort of abandoned lots that would be produced?
turning them over to the city parks department for one thing. In Staten Island, there is sort of a wetlands area, wetlands belt, and that would be expanded presumably along this stretch of land. Maybe building dunes, creating a buffer zone, which is what a lot of planners and environmentalists say should be done anyway.
You can hear the old way and the new way, maybe within just a stretch of weeks here. Here was a press conference, Matthew, you may recall. This was December 28th, New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand urging Congress to pass a Sandy relief bill because the money was needed, she said, by local communities to rebuild hit after the storm.
It's a time of grave and precious need. Families are still not in their homes. Children are necessarily not in their school. So we want to make sure they can rebuild their homes, be back in their communities, and that is what we need this money for.
But here's Governor Cuomo, January 9th, saying there are some places, it may not be the right idea to come back.
There are some places where people may choose not to build back. We want to run a program that will provide the funds to buy out those homeowners who don't want to rebuild and want to move on to higher ground, literally, and that would be smart.
Moving to higher ground in an age of climate change and wild weather. Matthew Sherman, there's some special incentives in here, as I read it, for communities that would leave lock, stock, and barrel. If everybody goes, an extra 5 or 10% for each seller.
Right. And that's meant to address the issue of, you know, what happens when you have a small neighborhood and 50% of the people decide to leave or 60. The people who are left behind are going to feel even more isolated. Maybe there's danger of crime increasing. They will complain that their property values are going down. They don't want to feel abandoned, and yet they don't want to give up their private property rights. And so that is supposed to, you know, provide that incentive so that if a community decides to leave, it will leave altogether.
We've got big issues in front of us here, and especially as we see a changing climate. The governor of New York is putting the issue on the table, saying, here's money, we'll buy you out. Maybe it's time to go for higher ground, as we heard him say in his State of the State speech right there. Matthew Sherman's with us from WNYC in New York. With us right now is Robert Young, a professor of coastal geology at Western Carolina University, joins us from Asheville, North Carolina. Robert Young, thanks very much for being here.
Great to be with you.
We have heard you speak out and say we've got too much development on the coast. What do you think of Governor Cuomo's maybe cracking the door open here to pulling away from the coast?
Well, if we're going to be spending public dollars to reduce the future risk and vulnerability of our coastal communities, then certainly this is a better way to spend it than trying to hold the shoreline in place and pretend like we're going to be able to do that forever.
What's been our historic response to trouble on the shore, storms and destruction?
Well, the historic response has been identical to our current response from Hurricane Sandy. I mean, we throw a tremendous amount of money at the problem. With Hurricane Sandy, we're planning, for the most part, and especially along the Jersey Shore, not only are we going to put the infrastructure back, but there was a significant amount of money in Sandy for future construction projects to rebuild all the beaches. So essentially, our response has been to put all the investment property back, to put the oceanfront homes back, and then to try and hold the shoreline in place in front of them.
Given the outlook for the climate in this century, what do you think our policy ought to be, Robert Young?
Well, we need to, as a nation, we need to stop creating this moral hazard. And the moral hazard we create is this. We have multiple government subsidies that are available to encourage the development of the oceanfront. We have federal flood insurance. We have aid bills like Sandy that put all the infrastructure back. You know, we have multiple programs that subsidize the risk of living on the oceanfront in the United States. And so for these communities to decide to put everything back is often a fairly reasonable decision because the rest of the U.S. has got their back. I mean, we are subsidizing the risk of being there. So I think the first thing we need to do is completely re-examine all of those subsidies that we have that encourage building in risky places, and then deciding whether or not you rebuild a home on any particular stretch of vulnerable shoreline will be more of a local decision, and they'll have to decide for themselves whether it's worth the risk or not.
Are you suggesting take all those federal subsidies away on flood insurance and infrastructure rebuilding, the subsidized risk gone, won't work in this century?
That's absolutely what I'm suggesting. I mean, we are told that, you know, and here, you know, I'm not really talking about Staten Island. I'm talking about resort communities, the Jersey Shore. You know, we're told that this coastal economy is incredibly robust. I forget what the number that the governor of New Jersey has used, $37 billion or something like that a year in tourism dollars. Well, if that's the case, then they ought to be able to pay for rebuilding the beaches and the infrastructure themselves. So if it makes sense economically to try and draw a line in the sand and hold those communities in place, then, you know, the local economy ought to be able to foot the bill. And, but right now we have a sort of the federal government that rides in after every storm and puts everything back.
People are going to say, you sound pretty heartless, Mr. Young. All those families we've seen on TV week after week struggling out of their homes, washed away.
Now, you have to understand that the vast majority of what we're talking about on the Jersey Shore is investment property. Yes, there are some people who are living in their primary homes, but these are investments people have made. You know, I owned U.S. Airways stock when they went bankrupt, and it was dumb. It was a dumb investment. And I lost my shirt, but I didn't expect the federal government was going to bail me out on that.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about where not to rebuild after Superstorm Sandy, perhaps. To rebuild or abandon is the question here. Governor Andrew Cuomo of New York is saying, let's set aside $400 million and buy out a bunch of people. By no means would that cover all the homes and much more hit by Superstorm Sandy. People thinking about this century and its climate and its weather and its risks in a new way these days. Matthew Sherman is with us from WNYC. He's been covering all the economic fallout and efforts at redevelopment after the storm. Robert Young from Western Carolina University, professor of coastal geology there. Here's President Obama after touring New Jersey's damaged coast. This is way back after the storm. He's with Chris Christie here, October 31st, looking at recovery and thinking about recovery.
My second message is, we are here for you. And we will not forget. We will follow up to make sure that you get all the help that you need until you've rebuilt.
And Governor Chris Christie of New Jersey on that day, we will rebuild.
We will rebuild. We are a tough, no-nonsense group of people in this state. You know that. And so we will rebuild. But for folks like me in my generation, it'll never be the same. The places that we knew growing up and that we now have the opportunity to take our children to, the thing that really weaves the fabric of your life in a state, many of those things are now gone and they'll be replaced, but they won't be the same.
And the next day, the mayor of New York, Michael Bloomberg, we will rebuild.
Recovering from it is not going to be easy, but by working together, we will recover and we will rebuild our city stronger than ever.
Robert Young, how do you look at the difference between, I don't know, mile after mile of second homes, vacation homes, and big urban centers? We've got the biggest of all, New York, right on the water there. Surely we've got to, what, stand up for the New York City?
Well, and there's a very big difference, I think. You know, as a nation, we may decide that there are portions of our shoreline that we are going to defend in place. And Manhattan, you know, would likely be one of those places. We have about 3,600 miles of shoreline, though, on the U.S. East Coast and Gulf Coast. And, you know, we can't hold all of it in place, and we can't hold all of it in place forever. Even if we had all the money in the world, we couldn't do this from a scientific perspective. We don't have the sand to do it. The rate of sea level rise increases, the vulnerability is going to be such that technically we won't be able to do it. And so, you know, at some point we have to develop a national policy and a national view of which areas it makes sense for us to try and hold in place and which areas we sort of cut loose. And I love to go to the beach. You know, I'm not anti-development. I'm not suggesting we send the stormtroopers in and order people off the coast. But we have to do it differently than we're doing it right now. And, you know, the economic calculus that's used to decide where it makes sense to rebuild has to have a much more local focus and a much more of a local contribution to the cost of that risk.
If you cut loose, as you say, people who live on the shore, you've got to cut them loose. What about, I don't know, Tornado Alley in the Midwest or wildfire territory in the Rockies? I mean, where do you stop with saying you're on your own?
It's not the same thing at all. I mean, nobody can tell you over the next 10 years where the next big tornado is going to be. At the coast, we know from a scientific perspective where the vulnerable shorelines are, and we know the places where there have been multiple storm impacts. I mean, the same tornado does not wipe out the same town, you know, seven times in 25 years. But that has happened to places like Dauphin Island, Alabama, where they've received federal disaster declarations seven times in the last 25 years, and we've gone in and rebuilt the infrastructure. So, you know, it's really not analogous. At the coast, we have this known vulnerability. We can identify it scientifically, and rising sea level is just going to make it worse.
Let's go to Sean calling from Walcott, Connecticut. Sean, thanks for calling. You're on the air. What do you think?
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Okay.
Well, I'm a firefighter, paramedic, so my first job is to respond to these incidents and take care of these people that, you know,
get in trouble
in these areas.
Yeah.
But secondly, I have a master's degree in emergency management, and I also teach it. And this is one of the subjects that we discuss very adamantly on both sides of what we do or don't do. And as your guests point out, there are areas that get inundated time and time again that have been taken over by the natural resources that exist. And there are areas that have said, we give up. We're no longer going to spend any more money, and we're going to take your houses, here's your money, walk away, live somewhere else. We can no longer invest in, A, your protection, and B, spending the money to rebuild these infrastructures and these houses.
But Sean, I mean, you're a paramedic, so you've seen the damage and the distress firsthand. You think about emergency planning. You know these communities. I mean, what's it going to take to get people to say, you know what, I love the beach, I love my house on the beach, and I'm going to walk away from it anyway?
In some cases, it's going to have to simply be somebody say, no longer are we going to do this. You are on your own. We're not going to protect you. If it gets flattened, we're not going to give you any more money. That's all there is to it. And it's plain and simple. That's what we're going to have to do. We're going to have to walk away as a government and say, no more. No more money from us. No more protection from us. You're on your own.
Sean, I appreciate your call. You've seen it firsthand. Matthew Sherman, what would happen to a politician in New York, on Long Island, you name it, who said that to his big population living on the coast?
Well, he would face a very tough fight if he were that's essentially using eminent domain, which we use to build public works, airports, basketball stadiums as well. But to use that in such an instance to protect the coast or retreat from the coast, as it were, that's a new application.
But is that really eminent domain or just a refusal of subsidy? Those aren't quite the same thing. Eminent domain says you must sell to me and get off this land. This is a little something different if you pull away subsidies, isn't it?
Yes, and I guess slowly, I guess I feel that eminent domain would be the logical extension of it if you think about it. I mean, you can't say to a citizen of the United States, we're not offering you the same protection. You built on the land that you built on. You bought the house legally through – you paid taxes on it this long, and suddenly we're withdrawing services from you. Withdrawing subsidies is already happening. The premiums for the National Flood Insurance Program, which is what – people pretty much who live along the coast in these 100-year flood zones pretty much have to pay are increasing to such an extent that a lot of people are rethinking whether or not to rebuild. And so that is going into their calculation, whether or not to accept buyouts. And another thing that's going into their calculation is right now they go back to their homes. They're flattened. Mm-hmm. They might get some insurance money, but not a whole lot, and not enough to perhaps rebuild. And so they're thinking, well, on the one hand, I could go through this process of trying trying to rebuild, or I could take a check from the government, which is easier. And I can take a check under Cuomo's proposal. It would be for the full pre-storm value of the house.
Matthew Sherman, Robert Young, stand by. Jessica Granis joins us right now from Washington. She's at Georgetown Climate Center and the Georgetown University Law Center. She's thought a lot about these issues. Jessica Granis, thanks for being with us today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You hear Robert Young, he's pretty stern on this. We've got to stop subsidizing the shoreline in an era of climate change. And then our first caller, a paramedic who's out there, you know, working with people in the water saying, we can't keep this up. Let's get out of there. What's reasonable? What's realistic here, Jessica?
Yeah, I mean, at the Georgetown Climate Center, we work with state and local governments and policymakers, and this is a very tough question that a lot of state and local governments are grappling with. And I think, you know, the remarkable thing of what Governor Cuomo has done is acknowledging the elephant in the room, which often doesn't get acknowledged after these large storm events, that these large storm events and the future is going to look very different than the past, and we're going to see more of these large storm events. So I think that is a critical piece of the puzzle, and people starting to realize that, you know, these flood events are going to happen more and more frequently and with greater intensity.
So what's the message in that? You know, take the federal money, build back smarter, stronger, higher on stilts, or get out of town, abandon.
Well, I mean, I think that is also a critical part of Cuomo's plan, is that it's not all one solution, that it's going to take coupling a bunch of different solutions together, one of which includes buying out properties in the most vulnerable parts of the community where you can't necessarily protect those communities with hard structures, thinking about a storm surge barrier for your more densely populated urban section of Manhattan, thinking about natural flood control. So where can we restore floodplains and beaches to provide natural flood protection? How can we make sure that where we do rebuild, we're rebuilding to be more resilient to future impacts? So we're building higher and on stilts and anchoring structures. So it's not just going to be one option. It's going to be a suite of policies that are going to need to get implemented.
Robert Young, there's been a lot of talk about rebuilding in a more resilient way after this. How applicable is that? How much of the problem can be solved by smarter rebuilding, Robert?
Well, those certainly are temporary solutions that can allow portions of the coastal economy to continue to function, you know, over the next couple of decades or so. You know, but some of these barrier islands in New Jersey are very low elevation and very narrow. And, you know, you can elevate your home if you want to, but if the barrier island is disappearing underneath you,
can't float, can't hover,
you know, then you're losing. And, you know, I think the other important thing to keep in mind here when we're talking about the subsidies, you know, federal flood insurance really does pay a small portion of the value of oceanfront homes. You know, if we're really looking at the costly real estate, you know, the governor's buyout plan is not going to buy a whole lot of oceanfront houses. And that's where the real problem is. That's where the greatest cost is to us as taxpayers.
Why wouldn't it? Because they're too expensive to buy, or why?
Absolutely. They're too expensive. I mean, you know, you go out into Long Island in the Hamptons and there are houses that are teetering over the edge on the dunes that cost $20 million each. And how many of those can you buy with $400 million? And, you know, those are the homes that we're trying to keep the beaches in front of with, you know, very costly beach nourishment projects.
So you're saying there the subsidy is beach nourishment, or is it the subsidized national flood insurance?
The flood insurance is peanuts in most of this, I think. Mm-hmm. The real cost to taxpayers is rebuilding the infrastructure, which is permitted under the Stafford Act. That's when the president declares a disaster, and we can pour all of this federal money into putting the roads back, the power grid back, all of these other aspects of infrastructure that allow this investment property to exist. And then, you know, we spend billions of dollars to try and pump beaches up in front of these homes. I mean, the Sandy bill had $3.5 billion for coastal construction projects, future coastal construction projects. Mm. And, you know, we don't even know how that money is going to be spent. But, you know, you could rebuild the beaches from Delaware to Connecticut with that money. And, you know, that's all subsidizing the risk for those oceanfront homes and allowing them to exist.
You know, you're kind of hardcore on this. You may be right, but what would the American coastline look like if the country took the medicine you're offering, Robert Young? What would it look like compared to now?
That's a good question. You know, in some places where there's a viable coastal economy, it would look exactly like it does right now. In some places, coastal communities would have to find creative ways to pool the risk. You know, every coastal community has their erosion hotspots that cause nightmares for emergency managers, and everybody knows where those places are. And there are a lot of folks in local government that would like to be able to get away from those spots. And, you know, the other thing that we have to keep in mind here is that trying to hold the shoreline in place along hundreds of miles of shoreline is incredibly environmentally damaging. I mean, this is an environmental disaster we're talking about here. We're using our beaches to protect property. You know, these are ecosystems. It's, you know, it's more than just let's put the sand back to protect investment homes. I mean, we're talking about a coastal ecosystem here as if it's, you know, its only purpose is to push up dunes to protect investment.
But I'm reading here a report that Matthew Sherman put together at WNYC. It says that the rule of thumb is it takes a mile of wetlands, let's say, to absorb a foot of storm surge. Sandy had a 14-foot surge. So are you going to pull development 14 miles away from the American coastline or even a fraction of that? Wouldn't that be economic death?
Yeah, I don't think anybody's suggesting anything like that. You know, we don't have wetlands along most of the U.S. coastline. The wetlands are up in the estuaries, and you know, the wetlands really don't function very much to reduce storm surge. They can reduce wave energy, and reduce the amount of damage behind the wetlands because the wetlands are good at mitigating the amount of wave energy that's getting in there. You know, the real issue for restoration is whether we should be spending all of this money to pump beaches back and the level and degree of protection that beaches are providing to these coastal communities.
But if those beaches weren't there, presumably, Matthew Sherman, a lot of the houses would people in those houses would no longer be so interested either.
That's right. Absolutely. I'm sure that's what people are looking for when they build houses there or buy houses there is beachfront property.
But, you know, you have to keep in mind that these are not people living in those houses. Okay, these are absentee landlords on those resort communities.
You mean second homes and rental properties and investors, you're saying?
That's correct. In North Carolina, where we've done the numbers, 98.5% of the oceanfront homes are owned by people who do not live in that county. They pay no taxes in that county. So, you know, this is investment property that they rent out. It's, you know, it's not mom and dad living on the farm back in Iowa on the old homestead.
Let's go far from the shore. Lorraine is calling from Nashville, Tennessee. Lorraine, you're on the air. What do you think?
I think I go along with what Robert Young is saying. There's so much that the government can do. We're already in a crunch, and the government can't afford to just give out this money to investment properties. I mean, I agree wholeheartedly with what he's saying. We've got to stop all the spending, and it's. I understand that people need help. And I'm passionate with that, but we can't do it anymore. It's like you give them this money, and then another disaster comes through, and then you give them some more money. When will it stop? It's just a continuous cycle of wasted money.
Lorraine, we've got it. Jessica Grannis, what do you say to that perspective out of Nashville looking at the coast?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are parts of the Stafford Act that we need to look at. I mean, one of the big problems with the Stafford Act is it actually requires, in some respects, or it only allows local governments and state governments to be reimbursed to rebuild to the pre-disaster design. So in some way, we're actually throwing good money after bad. We're allowing people to rebuild in the same place where, you know, they were vulnerable in the first place.
In the same way.
So we need to look at that, yeah.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about where not to rebuild after Superstorm Sandy, to rebuild or abandon, and what the government should insure, should pay for in a time of climate change. Jessica Grannis from the Georgetown Climate Center at Georgetown University Law Center in Washington is with us. Robert Young from Western Carolina University, professor of coastal geology there. Our thanks to Matthew Sherman from WNYC who joined us. We've got a lot of callers coming in here. Nick in Norwich, Connecticut. Nick, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Great show. this is like any long-term problem. It's going to take a long time to get out of it. But one of the things that absolutely needs to be done is that over the whole country, somebody may have been dealing with this, there are a series of flood maps that describe areas that are liable to flood. And if they are, it's very hard to get insurance and should become impossible to get insurance. And without that, you can't get a mortgage. So that, over a period of time, will stop people building in these areas. And if it's necessary to describe great hunts of the coastline like this, that will, over a period of time, take things out of there. And that should also apply to Tornado Alley. If you want to live in Tornado Alley, you need to build houses that are not going to be damaged by tornadoes. And it's essentially the same thing. People need to take the risks. And by the way, if you're building $20 million houses on cliffs overlooking the water, you need to assume all the risk of that. And if you want to build up the shoreline in front of you, well, maybe you can't even do that.
That might be an incentive to go away, but if everybody has to take all the risk on their own, I mean, what about the San Andreas Fault in California? What about, I don't know, avalanches?
Well, I think it's the same thing. You want to build in places where nature is going to clobber you. Now, it takes a long time to phase these things in. I mean,
Nick, we've got it, but of course, nature can clobber you in a lot of places. Robert Young, what about this insurance argument? Get out of subsidizing insurance, and the problem will take care of itself, that it will just become too expensive for people to be in super high-risk zones, coast or otherwise.
Well, there definitely is some truth to that. You know, the coastal zone is not operating as a free market. We subsidize flood insurance. Many states have coastal wind pools. I mean, the largest insurer of coastal property in Florida is the state of Florida itself. You know, people who wouldn't normally support public health insurance for all folks in Florida see no irony that they have publicly provided property insurance. And, you know, I think that if we had a real free market at the coast where the risk of being there was factored into the cost of the property and the cost of, you know, renting a house there, then people would be making probably wiser decisions and fairly different decisions.
What percentage of oceanfront property would go away if we were operating on that basis?
You know, oceanfront property is still fairly lucrative. You know, we hear over and over again for how much income the coastal economy generates. I think it's just a simple matter of finding a way to allow that very prosperous economy to siphon off a few percent to pay for rebuilding the infrastructure and building beach nourishment projects and maintaining that particular community. I mean, there are places like Hilton Head Island, South Carolina. They have a lodging tax. They're allowed to keep a portion of that by the state of South Carolina, and they've been paying for their own beach nourishment projects for years. I mean, that's basically what everybody should be doing.
Jessica, we're trying to get a beat on what it would really mean to come to grips with the climate challenge we're up against in this century. I mean, Robert says, well, you know, it's lucrative for a lot of people, property along the beach. People could handle their own expenses, even when it came to these kind of big events of nature. If we took away the subsidies, the Stafford Act stuff for infrastructure, the insurance subsidies such as it is, how do you imagine that our coastal development profile would change? Would we just look very different on the coast or not?
That's a hard question to answer. I mean, I think that, you know, like your previous caller was saying, this is going to be a tough question, and it's going to take a long time to unravel some of this bad policy that we've put in place. We've made some step forward in terms of in reforming the National Flood Insurance Program and ensuring that, premiums that homeowners pay are going to better reflect the risks of living in these areas, but we haven't fixed a lot of the problems. One of the things that the caller mentioned as well is the flood insurance rate maps. And these historically are, 20 to 30 years out of date. They're in the process of being updated, but they're still not going to account for future sea level rise. And when we're seeing, we're in New York, they're potentially expecting up to 6 feet of sea level rise over the next century. That's going to make a big impact in terms of flood patterns. And
that is so dramatic that I'm trying to take a little trip with you to your sort of big vision. of what it might look like if a kid born today comes back, you know, at age 80 and looks at the American Eastern Seaboard? Is he going to say, oh my gosh, where did everything go? When I was a kid, you wouldn't believe all the development that was here. And a century of climate change, I guess, is just demanded that that go away? Or are we going to find ways to be on stilts and be behind barriers and still be there, Jessica?
I mean, I think the trajectory we're going on now is the latter one. I think we're wanting to hold the line, and we're wanting to stay in place, and we're building on stilts, and we're putting up seawalls. And I think that it's going to take some policy and lawmaking and amendments to laws at both the state and federal levels to get us to a different outcome.
We've got Congressman Bill Pascrell joining us right now, U.S. Representative from New Jersey's 9th Congressional District, Democrat there. District includes Bergen and Hudson and Passaic counties. You've seen plenty of storm damage. Congressman Pascrell, thanks very much for being with us.
Tom, it's an honor to be with you.
What do you think of the Governor Cuomo in New York saying, here's a bunch of money, let's just get away from the shore, folks. We'll buy you out, go somewhere else. Is that the strategy we're going to have to sooner or later take in the climate change age on the Jersey Shore, Congressman?
Not as a blanket policy, Tom, but there's no question that many states around the United States have started to put caveats on money going from either the state government or the federal government. Because if we're just going to replicate, if we're going to respond, if we're going to have the same kind of damage each storm, then we're really putting bad money after bad money, and that's what it comes down to. In some areas, they're going to have to remove the buildings, and some areas are going to raise the buildings. So I think that's why mitigation is very, very, very critical to the whole process of healing, whether you're in New Jersey or whether you're in Carolina or whether you're in Florida.
But do your constituents want to hear it, you know, that maybe we just can't rebuild there? Or are they like, no, we don't want to hear that?
I think it's being realistic, and maybe we should have been realistic a long time ago, which I suggest. We've done that in New Jersey, in my district, where there have been a tremendous amount of flooding. It's historical. There's a chronology. You can follow these storms for the last 20, 30 years, and we put money back into it to get people back into the same homes. Well, you know, the same thing's going to happen. I think that's a waste of taxpayers' money. Now, look, I know that's a precious possession that someone has in their home. So I don't say this lightly at all, but I'm just saying this is the reality of it. And if towns choose to go that way, then I think that there should be some help in order to get to that situation. I mean, we have that on rivers. We don't have to go to the oceans. We've done that with rivers in New Jersey, where we would not allow any further development. I mean, many of the problems we have, Tom, has to do with overdevelopment, and we put blindfolds on ourselves as we approve these projects. And of course, they bring ratables, gives people a place to sleep, gives people a place to run their business.
Sure.
I understand all of that. But I'm saying, if you're doing the same thing over and over again, you know what Einstein said about that.
Yeah, not good outcomes. But Governor Cuomo, a Democrat, has been a lot more outspoken on this than Governor Christie, your Republican governor. I mean, could somebody in New Jersey win statewide office with all the development you've got on the Jersey Shore if they came in saying, we can't backstop that anymore?
Well, I just think that I think Governor Christie, who I don't agree with him on very many things, I think he's done an outstanding job on the storm. Now, the aftermath is what it's going to be all about, whether or not we respond in kind to this, you know, really dramatically destructive storm that's taken away the livelihoods and life of a lot of people. Whether you're talking about New York, whether you're talking about Connecticut or New Jersey, and we have to be realistic. It needs a total package, and I think we need to be concerned about how we spend the money. We fought hard to get this, as you well know, Tom.
Yeah.
There was a battle in the Congress. There was a battle, particularly in the House of Representatives. I mean, New Jersey, New York, and Connecticut always respond over the board, for crying out loud, not only in supporting legislation to help those folks in areas all over the country, be it a snowstorm or be it a hurricane or a tornado, but the fact of the matter is we've sent people to help, whether it be police, fire, emergency responders, and to see how many folks in the Congress voted against this in the House of Representatives. I'll tell you, it wasn't a very joyful place.
Well, I finally
got the vote.
I think people have a lot of sympathy, but at the same time, we're looking at changing circumstances, and we definitely have people writing in here as we speak from inland America saying, you know, we love you, but it's hard to subsidize the risk of that coastal life.
Well, that's why mitigation is very important, not only just rebuilding, whether we rebuild in the same places, whether we rebuild in the same way. If we don't rebuild properly, then what we're simply doing is saying, well, we're reacting. We're not really responding, you know, to the problem. A large portion of mitigation, Tom, will go towards a $20 million study, for instance, by the Army Corps to develop a strong, comprehensive regional plan for mitigation against a similar storm. I mean, we could have a similar storm next week. What will happen? Well, are we prepared for that storm, or are we going to simply replicate all the damage and further in this storm? We've got to protect ourselves against it. It seems to me one of the things that needs to be considered in mitigation is we build, rebuild in the same places where the storm had a devastating effect, where the rivers overflowed their banks.
Yep.
Where the surge pushed the rivers over. You take Monarchy and Little Ferry in New Jersey. They hadn't had flooding like this for in God knows how many years, but the Hackensack River backed up, came over the berm,
yep.
And the berm wasn't high enough. There are similar, I mean, many places like this in the metropolitan area, particularly in this storm, but we've had other storms. Irene was devastating, as you remember, last year. Ironically, a lot of our storms have happened on October the 29th, 2 years in a row.
Yeah, watch out. Mark your calendar. It's coming over the berm all over the place.
I circled it, Tom.
Congressman Bill Pascrell from New Jersey's 9th Congressional District.
We be ready, and money itself does not make you ready.
Congressman, thank you so much for joining us today.
Tom, take care.
Congressman Bill Pascrell from New Jersey. Mitigation, Robert Young, how far can it take us? Essentially, you know, build stronger, be ready next time, mitigate.
Well, you know, mitigation means build a wiser infrastructure, and it also means get infrastructure out of places that are identifiably vulnerable from a scientific perspective, and we need to do both. I mean, you know, the fact of the matter is, Tom, that the map of the coast of the United States is going to look different 50 years from now than it looks today. And if we want to preserve that coastal economy that everybody's interested in, as well as the coastal environment, we need a long-term national plan for how we get from today to that spot 50 years from now where we don't have a coastal wasteland like you've suggested a couple of times. You know, we want to have a working coast. We want to have places for people to go to the beach. And in order to do that, we have to begin to think outside the box a little bit, and we have to develop a long-term plan with a national perspective.
Well, I don't mean a wasteland by any means, and I know when you talk about a healthy coast, but what you mean is as beaches, but not so many buildings, not so many houses, if I've heard you correctly, Robert nope. Young. So it does look pretty different given how, you know, how crowded so much of the American shore is.
I take my family to the beach 3 or 4 times a year, and I want to stay in a beach house when I'm there.
Okay.
And so, you know, I envision a coast that has houses. They just have to be in the right places and on the right shorelines. And we, you know, coastal scientists, if you put 10 coastal scientists in a room and asked us to identify the 10 most vulnerable shorelines in America, we'd agree almost instantaneously on 8 or 9 of them. You know, this is – we don't need to learn anything new to do this the right way. We just need to map out those areas where it doesn't make sense to be spending money anymore and focus on the areas that we can, you know, protect and preserve for the long run.
So this was a big one, Superstorm Sandy, 50, 60 billion appropriated here. Do you see it going to the right kind of response to the damage of this storm, Robert?
Boy, you know, I wish I did, but I'm not optimistic. You know, we've given a tremendous amount of money to the United States Army Corps of Engineers to protect the coast. And they've got no deadline on when they spend the money, and there's no list of projects. And, you know, with all due respect to the Army Corps of Engineers, they're engineers. They build stuff, you know. They're not in the business of getting people off the beach. They're in the business of building seawalls and pumping up beaches and that kind of stuff. So So that's where we just spent $3.5 billion for future coastal mitigation, was with the Corps and with Corps projects. And I'm, you know, I hope that the Corps will get together a group of experts and think very, very differently about how they're going to spend that money than they have in the past.
What do you think, Jessica Grannis? Are we getting Mother Nature's message here? Are we rethinking what our relationship's going to be, how we face the shore?
Well, I'm heartened by, you know, the New York State Commission that Governor Cuomo put together and some of the recommendations that they've adopted. We provided recommendations to them on how they could rebuild differently and think about how they rebuild differently in light of climate change. And I think there are good things coming out of this, and people are thinking in the right direction.
Same old may not do it. We've got some fearsome climate to confront, it appears. Very grateful to all of my guests this hour, Matthew Sherman at WNYC, Congressman Bill Pascrell from New Jersey's 9th Congressional District, and Jessica Grannis at the Georgetown Climate Center and Georgetown University Law Center, joining us from Washington. Jessica, thank you very much for your insights.
Thank you.
And Robert Young at Western Carolina University, professor of coastal geology there. Robert Young, thank you so much.
My pleasure, Tom.
Listeners, you can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.